On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, with me is Diarmaid Gavin, horticulturist, garden designer, Chelsea Gold Medal winner, and we're going to talk about a man called Edward James, of whom I had never heard.
It's funny, so many people, even in the gardening industry, I started putting up a few posts on Instagram about this yesterday, and they don't know about him and they don't know about his story. But he's had an extraordinary influence, both probably mainly in terms of art, but certainly also in terms of garden design in this particular garden.
The question is, was he a royal or was he not?
He could have been. He wasn't sure himself. His dad might have been King Edward the VII, or his granddad might have been King Edward the VII. So he came from very wealthy stock. His presumed father was part of the Gilded Age. He made a fortune on the railroads. He was American, made a fortune at the railroads over there, and he married this woman called Forbes, who was a Scottish society beauty and an aristocrat.
So his name was William James, this fellow who made pots and pots of money, married this woman who knew how to live.
She knew how to live. She'd been brought up in a certain way, and in a way, she'd been brought up in the Victorian era where children were to be of a certain class presented to their parents occasionally.
Yeah. Now, you have a story which I think is extraordinary. On a Sunday, she'd dress up for church in full splendour, and then she'd say to the nanny, "Bring one of the children, please, whichever one matches my outfit."
It's a story that he told. So he said, yes, she'd go over and call up to the governess and say, bring down one of the children because she was going to church. And the governess said, which one? Whichever suits.
I'm wearing blue today, darling. So his upbringing was a very strange upbringing. What kind of a child was he?
So he was a child that was full of imagination. They used summer in Scotland, and he used to be in his cot. And he remembers waking up at 7 a.m. when he was about 5 or 6. And he remembers being trapped behind the brass bars of his cot. And he couldn't get up until the governess came to
free him.
So he developed imagination and a rather surreal imagination. And he used to use the pillows in the cot to imagine they were mountains. And he used to create, you know, other worlds in his mind because he was in prison every day for that hour and a half.
Now, he went to the usual places, Eton and then Christchurch, Oxford. He expected to become a gentleman, I suppose.
And he mixed with all the bright young things.
He married?
He married, yeah. Well, this is when he began to kind of divert. So his attention from what he was expected to do. He was of artistic inclination. So first of all, he became a poet, which didn't please his mum that much. And he inherited vast wealth because his dad died when he was only 11. Then he went off to Europe and he met this ballet dancer.
Great name, Tilly Losh.
Tilly Losh. So she was really quite extraordinary. He was utterly captivated by her. And they got married. Now, I think she was probably more into the idea of him and his money than himself. And she began to spend a lot of time away from him, which displeased him. So he put on a ballet, or he invented a ballet, or had one commissioned for her, which was very elaborate, which had a massive budget for sets and for other dancers and for costumes and whatever. So he sponsored this whole ballet, which by all accounts wasn't bad. But when they turned up at his house, the family house in West Dean, put on a performance, she wasn't there.
Ah. And she scarpered.
She scarpered. She had affairs and they divorced. And he was really bereft by this, but very angry about it. And won the divorce battle, but it cost him an absolute fortune, and really took himself off to Europe and then beyond to get over that.
He became involved with the artistic set. He knew the greats of the mid-century.
So he appreciated the surreal, and this is when the surrealists were, artists were really beginning to make waves, let's say. So he met Dali early on, and Dali was overjoyed because here was somebody who understood his ideas, understood about surreal imagination, and could sponsor him.
He could spend the money as well.
He could spend
and
the money.
And he was the sponsor of the original Lobster telephone. You've sent me a picture of that, and it'll be up online.
Yes, well, he wasn't maybe only the kind of sponsor who made it happen. It's said that they were all together and they were eating lobsters and they sort of throwing them around the room. One landed on the receiver of the telephone and he said to Dali, that's now surreal, isn't it? Because it's both practical and mad and whatever. That began. And Mae West lifts, the sofas in the shape of Mae West lifts were also his, whether they were his instigation, he understood that the shape of a lips could be at one practical in terms of a sofa, and then very significant in terms of what they represent.
And his own home became a haven for the surrealists.
In the mid-30s, his home on the family estate in West Dean, Lutyens had designed this house that would have been very aristocratic and would have looked as if it had always been there. And he tore it apart and spent, you know, so much money on commissioning carpets and cabinetry and ideas and furniture, all of which were quite surreal.
Is that still there?
That's still there, yeah. And the whole estate is still there because in 1964 he set up a trust to turn the estate into a place of arts and crafts where people could go to learn, and indeed there's a horticultural college there now.
Now, we didn't mention the garden yet, which is in Mexico. It's called Las Posas.
So he took himself, first of all, off to America, to parts of California. He joined a bit of a cult, became a vegetarian, kind of fell out of love with that, then moved to Bel Air and Hollywood, had mansions in Malibu and whatever, knew all the film stars. That didn't do it. Then he heard about this place in Mexico that was in the hills and had these amazing streams, mountain streams, and the mountain streams would result in 12 amazing blue pools. And he knew the climate there would have been perfect for growing orchids. So he took himself off there. He purchased about 300 acres, and that's when, maybe for him, his life really began.
Now, you've sent me pictures of this garden. It's quite extraordinary because it's a mixture of concrete and plants.
So he was obsessed by plants, obsessed by animals. He used to travel with parrots in cages and a boa constrictor. And there are loads of stories in, you know, grand hotels of these animals getting loose and causing all sorts of alarm. And he decided he wanted to build a garden and really plant it. And he was obsessed by orchids and other plants like bamboo and philodendron. And this place was the perfect place to grow them. But then one evening, and he had thousands of them, an amazing collection of orchids. But one evening in, I think it was 1962, there was this thing that the locals call the Night of the White Ash. It snowed and it was frosty and the place was just destroyed. So he vowed that he was going to build flowers that could never be destroyed by an event like this again from concrete.
From concrete. Now, some of the pictures, you've got a staircase rising to nowhere.
Lots of staircases, towers and towers and towers. And they were meant to rise. Most of this stuff was, even though he was building it for 30 years, remained unfinished. There was a local carpenter who was make moulds from bamboo, who was really, really good. And then he employed about 40 people and spent about 20 million in today's money constructing these towers that went up and up and up. There was one house he built, the house of the three stories, or maybe four. Another one was the house of the whale, because it was the shape of a whale that created the roof. But there were towers that were huge, and they went into the jungle, and they were made of fluid shapes, and they were kind of fairly dangerous. They had steps all around them that you could climb up, and slowly they were consumed by the jungle because of the moisture in the air. The moss would come and take them over, philodendrons would climb up, and it was really quite remarkable, and it was exactly what I wanted.
Well, it is well worth looking at these pictures. And if you ever get to Mexico, have a visit to it, because it's quite a remarkable place. Dermot, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dermot Gavin. And that's all we've time for. Don't forget, our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on Newstalk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.